Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. And today is Friday, and it is January 27th, and it's Chinese New Year Eve. So Gong Qi Fa Sai for anyone who is celebrating Chinese New Year. And of course, the Chinese market is closed today, and the mainland market will be closed all of next week. I thought that this week we should really start off and look at government bond yields, because this really is going to be perhaps the biggest theme of the year. We have had a substantial run-up in US Treasury yields over the last few months, and this is not the first time that we have had a counter-trend rally within the context of what has been an over 30-year bull market and downtrend in yields. And what we can clearly see, and I think you are going to have ample evidence of when we click through more of these charts, is how much commonality there has been. We have had this move. What we can also see on this long-term chart is that the yield lows are pretty much in the region of where they were back in 2012, that there has been a loss of momentum. And this isn't the first time that we've had a loss of momentum. We had a loss of momentum between 2003 and 2008, where yields, in fact, had been just very gently trending higher for a while, but modestly. We also had a period where yields didn't do very much of anything at all in the early 1990s. But we are obviously at much lower levels now. We have seen that yields compressed in a dramatic fashion following the credit crisis and massive money printing, massive issuance of bonds, and even more buying of bonds by central banks than had ever been considered possible previously. And that resulted in yields compressing initially, but then going sideways when there was even the whiff of a potential that the Fed would stop buying bonds. The Fed is now raising interest rates, and that is quite different to the counter-trend rally that we had back in 2013. That was in relation to the taper tantrum, when the Fed had said that they were thinking about stopping purchases. Then the bond market sold off. Now that they have stopped purchases and they are now raising interest rates, we have had this sell-off. And part of the reason that it has been so aggressive is because we have also had a political change in the USA, where a new administration has been introduced, which is more business-friendly and growth-oriented. And there is the real potential that there is going to be some kind of reform to the tax system, that there is going to be lower corporate taxes, that there will be a fiscal stimulus, and there will be deregulation of the banking sector. And all of that is potentially good news for growth. But of course, if it's good news for growth, it's bad news for bonds. And there is the potential that with wage growth still doing rather well, that we might very well have the resumption of inflation. But as I said, we should really click through more of these charts. So there's Germany. It is an almost equal length process of yield compression, and yields can't really go very much below zero. They spent some time below zero at the in the middle of last year, but that was not sustained. And now we see that that the yield is back above the 200-day moving average. And just by looking at the consistency of the chart, we can see that it has spent some time above the 200-day moving average previously. But those occasions were relatively short-lived. If this case is truly different, then the next time it pulls back, it will continue to find support in the region of the trend mean. And what we would need to see in order to confirm that we are going to get a resumption of the downtrend, or we're going to move into a much more volatile period of base formation development, would be that the next time yields compress, that they do not find support in the region of the trend mean. And this is the exact same chart, but it is the EU 10-year, and you can see that there is the German Bund and the EU 10-year. They're completely different tickers, and it just goes to ram home the point that the euro is the Deutschmark. It's just the Deutschmark by a different name. The European Bund is in fact the Bund, and that everything is priced off the Bund in Europe. The euro is just a simple extension of the Deutschmark. Japanese government bond yields have spent a lot of last year below zero. The Bank of Japan had committed to maintaining the zero bound, and right now the yield is at about 8 basis points. There was news today that they had bought more bonds in an effort to compress the yield, but it had very little effect on the market. What it did have an effect on was the yen. The UK's government bond is now testing its downtrend. It is above the 200-day moving average. We can see very clearly that there is a downtrend. A sustained move above 2 would break the medium-term progression of lower rally highs, and it will need to continue to find support in the region of the trend mean. And then we get a very similar story in Switzerland. We had had a very steep compression of yields all the way through from 2014. That progression of lower rally highs has been broken, and we are now pushing back up towards the zero bound. You can see that Switzerland had negative yields for longer than any other country. Yields went negative in the middle of 2015, or beginning of 2015, and spent and have really spent the entire time since at negative yields, which is a further testament to the fact that a lot of investors continue to look on Switzerland as a safe haven region. Australian government bond yields having been closer to 10% in the late 1970s, excuse me, that's not 10%, that's 16%, and are now pretty much close to 2.75, are now testing that progression of lower rally highs. New Zealand is a very similar story. Canadian government bonds have broken very clearly that progression of lower rally highs since the beginning of, well, it's really the end of 2013, and are pushing back up towards 2%. And now we can see that there is very clear commonality. But when we look at some of the European bonds, then we get a different story, because Greek bonds have been going sideways. They are the subject of a great deal of intervention by the ECB. But Spanish bonds have not been the primary source of the focus of attention, and are now potentially breaking a medium-term downtrend. Italian bonds are breaking up. They had consolidated above the 200-day moving average, having broken the progression of lower rally highs late last year, and are now pushing on to new high ground. Portuguese bonds have been trending higher for over 2 years already, and that continues to look like a bullish chart. Belgian bonds have broken their progressions of lower rally highs. French bonds are breaking progressions of lower rally highs. Swedish bonds, which of course they do have their own currency, have been much less volatile, and it's the same with Denmark. But Finnish bonds are pulling away from the region of the trend mean. Austrian bonds, having flirted with zero, are back pushing back up again. So are Dutch bonds. So we do have very clear commonality. There are certainly problem childs on the periphery. When we look at these government bond yields, we can really tell the entire story of what is happening in the global market today. Because there is the real potential that the 30, and let's call it what it is, that the yield peaked in 1981 for U.S. Treasuries, and it's now 2017, so it's a 36-year bull market. It is a secular bull market that is in the process of potentially ending now, that there has been a base formation ongoing, and that when you have had a trend that persists for that long, then you start to get into the psychology of the market that functioned so perfectly for all that time was to buy the dips. There was certainly a lot of buying the dip talk at the beginning of this year, and it hasn't worked. It might yet work, but it hasn't worked yet. And that is the important point, that when you are talking about a trend that has been going on for 36 years, you can have all the evidence in the world, you can have a very strong view, but until we have real losses taken by the people that made the money, that made money by buying the dips, then you will not have absolute confirmation. You will not have the tide of sentiment really turning against the asset class until the people that have been the real cheerleaders are seen to be losing money. And despite all the volatility in the oil price, Norway has been reasonably quiet, but then Polish bonds are breaking up. That is a very clear range and a first step above the range, and now breaking up. So, we definitely see evidence of base formation completion. And then when we look at some of the emerging markets, we do not see the same problems with debt, despite the fact that South Africa's currency has been incredibly volatile, and there are major questions being asked about governance and corruption in that country. Government bond yields have been actually pretty steady, that they've been largely range bound for about 6 years. Mexico is the subject of a great deal of short selling right now, so yields have pushed upwards. But at 7.58%, and against a background where the government has removed fuel subsidies, where the central bank has been raising interest rates, and where the currency has halved since 2008, then there is a lot of bad news has already been priced in. Colombian government bond yields are going lower. Peruvian government bond yields are moving lower. Singapore has been pretty much has been going sideways. And then Chinese government bond yields have gone from 2.65% to 3.36% in just the last few months. That is quite different than what we've seen anywhere else. They have made a mess out of government bond trading. And it does seem that every time the Xi administration has instituted a financial innovation, whether it is options trading, futures trading, or now futures trading in government bonds, that they created a bubble and then a bust. The bust in futures trading for government bonds has resulted in higher borrowing costs for the country, and there was a very clear downtrend where yields went from 4.6 to 2.6 in really just the last couple of years, and that trend is now over. So there is the increasing likelihood that this is just a very big range, that the low back in 2009 is probably the low, and that the upper side of that range is quite a bit above where prices are today. But Indian government bond yields have continued to compress. So then when we can draw some big conclusions, where are the real debt problems? The debt problems are not in emerging markets. Emerging market yields are not surging higher. In fact, the majority of emerging market yields have been really inert. The big problems for debt are in Europe. The big bubble in debt was in the Western world, where we have had massive issuance of debt. That is going to represent a headwind. When we think about what is it that, why isn't, excuse me, why haven't we had the big blowout in debt in emerging markets? Because they went through the Asian financial crisis, and nobody would lend them money for really quite a long time. It has taken a long time for them to re-lever, and then that re-leveraging has been rather sporadic. In many cases, they are creditor countries, so that helps to stabilize their respective government bond yields. In a market where we have such commonality for the majority of OECD countries, and then that commonality completely disappears for emerging markets, then we do have to consider that we are going to have two very different outcomes. Even Russia, where we have had big volatility in the oil price and in the currency markets, government bond yields have been really very steady. In fact, there is still that progression of lower rally highs, and at 4%, it isn't aggressive. Brazilian US dollar government bond yields are still largely range bound. So I think that that really does help to, should help to frame our view of what we can expect. If the US government bond market is topping out, there is, and government bonds and bonds generally are multiples the size of the equity markets. There are, and I think it is important that we went through a period of synchronized global economic expansion, and it was predicated on loose access to liquidity. We had a massive crash, and the answer to try and revive growth was to print money. We had synchronized global monetary expansion, and it created a lot of asset price inflation. But what it did not create was substantive growth. The failure of that strategy has resulted in the growth of these populist movements, most particularly in the UK and the USA, which are also among the countries that have got the most debt. The next leg of that particular question is now moving towards France and the Netherlands, where we have seen that there has been an additional rise in populism, that it is not being there. The popularity of populism has not been confirmed in the polls. Again, it wasn't confirmed in the UK, it was not confirmed in the USA. So people are putting less faith in polls. What we can see is that government bond yields are expanding right across the European region, and they have got more developed evidence of base formation completion than just about anywhere else. And that is a big question. So when we look at the euro, because the obviously when we look at a currency, we cannot simply look at one currency in isolation. It is always a ratio between two different currencies. The euro has been ranging for much of the last 18 months. It hit a peak around $1.60 in 2008, 2009. It was unable to sustain it. The previous time it looked at that $1.50 area was back in the early 1980s. And the dollar experienced a subsequently a very large bull market all the way through until 1985. We have had a substantial rally in the dollar over the last few years. And now the question is whether that bull market trend for the dollar is going to persist. What we have seen in the last 6 weeks has been a reversion back to the mean. The euro has rallied, but it isn't, we could say, has the euro rallied or has it been that the US dollar has been unwinding a short-term overbought condition? And I think that the latter argument is much more convincing. When we look at where the 200-day moving average is, it is right in the region of that spike high back on the first week of December. And it really does need to sustain a move above the trend mean to question the potential for the euro to move lower from here. When we look at those government bond yields, and we know that the US dollar is the subject of a rising interest rate environment, and Europe most definitely is not. And there is the additional potential that if a populist party wins in France or the Netherlands or Italy, then, or indeed in Germany, then the potential for the fiscal straitjacket under which the EU has been has self-imposed this straitjacket, by the way, then that could be removed, that we could move from a period of synchronized global monetary expansion to a period of synchronized global fiscal expansion. And of course, fiscal stimulus is all about spending money you don't have in the hope that you can stimulate growth and that the growth will then help to pay back the money that was borrowed. But it isn't great news for currencies. And Europe needs a weaker currency because, and I've posted the chart of the Italian lira in comment of the day, I think it was yesterday, but I'm going to show it again today because we can see that the lira is quite a way away from where it traded before the introduction of the euro. And that is something that is, I think, really worth considering. The majority of southern European countries and France have on occasion relied on the devaluation of their respective currencies to enhance their competitiveness. They have not run hard money regimes. They have regarded the currency as something that can be played with in order to boost their international competitiveness. And that is something that is going to have to be adopted again. Europe really does need a fiscal stimulus with unemployment rates in the teens, with youth unemployment rates, and admittedly, Europe has got declining birth rates. It has got declining populations. So the number of youth is, we are not talking about the same percentage of the population that you have in an emerging market, but nonetheless, when you have youth unemployment of 24% and an entire generation of young people that rely on state subsidies, then you are in a very sick environment from an economic perspective. So they need to solve that problem. Without solving that problem, the EU is going to break up. And then the question will be, what will that do to stock markets? Well, if we do get a populist winning in either France or the Netherlands in the short term, then we can anticipate that there is going to be a great deal of volatility on stock markets, and but most particularly on the euro. The euro could quite easily break downwards, and in nominal terms, then the euro stocks index would rise. European corporations have spent a great deal of time expanding within the EU, but they are also globally present. And when we look at this, the euro stocks index over the last 20 years, it has been confined to this very large range. And we are now only about midway through that range. The upper side of the range is around 450, and the price after a 6-year rally already is still only at 354. If the euro devalues further, then this index will move higher. There are a substantial number of globally present shares right across the European Union that would benefit enormously from a continued or an even weaker currency. If we see a weaker euro, then obviously the EU is not the only country that wants a weaker currency. The UK has seized the initiative and has already is already heading for the door. The pound had got all the way up to the upper side of its range over the last few weeks, and now is the area where one would anticipate that it begin to find some encounter some resistance. It is down over 30% from its peak in 2014. So the UK has already had a boost to its competitiveness It is already among the fastest growing economies, not only in the European region, but among the larger economies globally. And the UK does not want a stronger currency. So there will probably be at least somebody thinking that it's time to be intervening to bring it back down again as it tests the upper side of its range. And the Japanese do not want a stronger currency. The 120 area has been an area of resistance for over a decade already, and we saw some substantial strengthening of the yen in the really for most of last year. And now there's the big question whether we're going to see the yen devalue even further from here. If it sustains a move, if the dollar sustains a move above 120, well then that will signal that the yen is going to move lower. The Nikkei index is right in the region of 20,000, and 20,000 is a big psychological level for any index. It briefly surmounted it back in 2015, and prior to 2015, the last time that it had surmounted that level was in 2000. When we look at the very long-term chart, it has had difficulty at the 20,000 level since 1990. So if it can sustain a move above 20,000, then we can conclude that the very, very long base formation in Japanese equities has ended. And that would be a very, very different environment than we have seen for a very, very long time in Japan. Chinese government bonds are rising. And the A-share market, having been the subject of incredible volatility in 2015, has been relatively inert. And there are questions about what China's place in the world is going to be over the next decade. There is the potential that there could be trade wars. There is the potential there could be real wars. And the spike up in government bonds, the relatively inert level of the stock market, and it has continued to hold this progression of higher reaction lows, and the relative volatility of the currency suggests that it isn't just news that the Chinese are going through a period of lower growth and rationalization of their economy, and we have ample evidence of that in the stock, commodity, and bond markets. The renminbi continues to trend lower against the US dollar, and that remains a consistent trend, and we are now just seeing another instance of an overbought condition being unwound, a range developing, and the renminbi would really need to sustain a move below the trend mean to even begin to question that it is going to continue to be devalued. So that suggests that China is going to be a more difficult place to invest. If government bond yields are rising and the currency is going down and the stock market is only putting in incrementally higher reaction lows, then the real argument for a big bull market in China is very hard to make. Whereas when we look at Wall Street, then we have an appreciating currency. We have interest rates that are rising, and we have stock markets that are not putting in incrementally higher reaction lows, but that are competing globally to be among the best performing stock markets, on not just in nominal terms, but on a currency adjusted basis globally. The USA has got some very clear advantages, and there is the argument that government bond yields are not rising because of a problem in the bond market, but rather that if you do have a strong economy and you do have growth and wage inflation, that the natural place for interest rates to be is not zero. And that is a very that is perhaps the most bullish interpretation of what we can see. But then if we look at the Dow Jones breaking to new all-time highs, or the S&P 500 breaking to new all-time highs, or and I think the Nasdaq 100 is a great example of a lengthy consolidation in the region of the previous peak, and now the Nasdaq 100 is breaking up to new all-time highs and taking out the psychological 5,000 level, then that is very good news, to put it mildly. But it's not great news for the total return on bonds. And I got MLT 1 US 10. Sorry for my fat fingers. The total return on US Treasuries is perhaps the most consistent trend in the world. It has been going up for as long as it has been in existence, and it might now be topping out. So, if it sustains a move below to 2060, then we will have had a lower high and a lower low. That, and that is something that we have not had. We have not seen it encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean and then breaking lower. It did something like that in 2013, but this has been a bigger move from a higher level, and it asks very big questions. Now, you cannot have a secular bull market without a wall of liquidity to fuel it, and government bonds represent a wall of money. They have been the subject of a massive momentum move where they sucked in money from all over the world, riding on the coattails of the Fed. There's a great deal of debt needs to be refinanced in 2018, but most particularly in 2019 and 2020. It's upwards of $1 trillion every year if you start adding together the government bonds, the corporate bonds, the high yield bonds, and the loans. There's a lot of debt needs to be refinanced. And with rising interest rates, that would suggest that we are going to see the ability of companies to roll over their debt at attractive levels questioned. There is going to be a lot more questioning of the balance sheets of companies. So then they need growth. They need margins to expand. And I think it was updated today. So we really should look at that chart. And let me see if I can find the ticker. So it's CPFTTOT. Sorry for the. Okay, so it will be updated at the close today. But corporate profits have gone nowhere since 2012. They've been largely range bound. If they break on the upside, it will be really clear confirmation. So that it does say the next update is today. So it will be after the close. It'll probably be updated on Monday. We will know whether corporate profits have broken on the upside. If they do indeed break on the upside, then that will give additional impetus to the breakout in stocks. And part of the reason that stock markets are breaking upwards is because of continued belief that you're going to have an uptick in global growth. And if global growth is picking up, well then that suggests that cyclical sectors leveraged to global growth do well when everyone is buying things and building things also do well. So the mining sector has been on a very clear uptrend for much of the last year, and it's a little bit overbought in the short term. The shipping sector went through such a large bear market that the shipping index, the Bloomberg Shipping Index, was discontinued because so many of the companies had gone bust. There, th those that remain are trading on very low price to book ratios. You can't buy the ships for to replace the ships would cost more than buying these companies, and that is about as low as they can possibly go. And we're starting to see evidence of base formation completion here. When we then go and think about what else can do well, if we're going to have interest rates rising, then the banking sector, and most particularly in the US, it's the regional banks have been leading the way. They're at new all-time highs. And that really is something that I don't think anybody would have believed possible in the teeth of the crisis back in 2008. We have had seen an incredible move on the upside from regional banks, and they have held almost their entire gain. So that is an additional indication that we are in a very different environment. With Europe representing the potential epicenter of risk, and we kind of know what is going to have to be done in order to avoid it, and it is really a question of whether there is the will, because it is all down to political will. The EU was formed through political will. It will be saved by political will, but it is going to require some very brave moves indeed. But the epicenter of potential upside is either now going to be in the less levered emerging markets, or it's going to be in the USA. And for the largest market in the world to also represent the country that is doing best from not only implementing technological innovation, but being the source of a great deal of technological innovation, as well as aspiring to, at least aspiring towards energy independence. Something that I've talked about previously is that energy independence is a wonderful aspiration, but due to the Jevons paradox, then it is something that is almost impossible, to sustain without a complete sea change. And it would require practically the banning of crude oil to stop the surge in demand over the very long term, because when prices go down, demand increases, and when prices go up, efficiency increases. When prices come back down, those efficiency increases lead to the additional decline, and then because prices are low, people want to use more of it. And that is potentially being challenged now by solar. Solar is competitive with oil, and it's most particularly competitive with coal. And that suggests that we're going to have a very volatile environment in the oil market, because oil now has a competitor for transport, and it never had that before. So there is a great deal of supply can become economic between $50 and $70. The futures curve is very tight, suggesting that producers are more than willing to hedge out their production at these levels, and spending is increasing. So that suggests that provided economic growth is doing well, then that will act as a tailwind for oil prices. But of course, the more economic growth we get, the greater the potential is that new sources of supply will be tapped, brought to market, and then prices will come back down. I think the most likely scenario is that oil prices are going to look like natural gas. Excuse me. Natural gas has been confined to a very volatile range between $2 and $6 for much of the last decade. And I think that that is something that is quite likely for oil prices. And it is really only now a question of what the upper side of that range is going to be. It is unlikely, I think, to be $55. It might be closer to 70. But it would require a major geopolitical event to send prices sustainably above 70. And I think that that will remain the case for at least the next decade. there is going to be a profound change in the energy environment, and the USA is among the greatest beneficiaries of that. So, if you have lower energy prices and the not just the technological innovation, but the introduction of that technology, those are really quite profound tailwinds to the economy. If you, in addition, have governance improving and a more business-friendly environment implemented, well, then that is an additional bullish characteristic, and it really does make the argument that we are in a secular bull market and that the surprises are going to be on the upside. That we have gone through a decade where we have experienced two incredible pullbacks, and they really did shape public sentiment for years after those events. And yet, what everyone is still fearful of is that we're going to have another crash. If this is a secular bull market, there will be recessions, there will be surprises, and there will be medium-term corrections. But if it is a secular bull market, we will not have crashes. That all those pullbacks, when they occur, will be buying opportunities. And that if it is a secular bull market, it will persist for at least another decade and potentially even 2 decades. That is the bull case for equities. And perhaps the biggest bull case for equities is that they are one of the most successful hedges against inflation. They are one of the best hedges against rising government bond yields because they can increase prices and they can increase dividends. So there is an awful lot of money sitting out there in bonds, and an awful lot of that money is sitting in passively invested bond funds. And if interest rates are rising, convexity increases, and the potential to make large losses in a passively managed bond fund has to be the base case. So when if we do indeed see yields moving higher and breaking conclusively breaking the medium-term, long-term downtrend in yields, then that is going to create big losses in the fixed income markets, and that will be the signal to start moving money into equities. And I think that the cult of the equity will resurface once more, and we have been I think equities have got a bad rap over the last 15 years because of two very large crashes. So I think if stocks are an inflation hedge, then it is worth considering gold, because gold is now at a rather interesting level. It's right in the region of the trend mean. It has begun to encounter resistance. If this is indeed a base formation development, if we are seeing gold beginning to return to demand dominance, then it will put in a higher reaction low. It absolutely needs to hold the low around 1100, and then it subsequently needs to take out the region of the trend mean. And it is certainly for the bulls to prove. Gold is an inflation hedge, but really only when we have. And I think it does best when inflation is outpacing the rise in interest rates. And right now, the inflation rate is not outpacing the pace of at which interest rates are being risen, and that represents a headwind. Inflation needs to pick up, and it needs to outstrip the pace at which the Fed, in particular, is raising rates. If that were to happen, then gold prices would surge higher. And in the meantime, there is an argument, and the chart tells us that there is an argument. We are in quite a volatile range, and so far prices are still trending lower. It really does need to find support soon, to really give credence to the medium-term bullish hypothesis. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and wish all the best to all of you.